welcome to Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burrow. More American athletes have punched their tickets to the 2020 Games in Tokyo, including Carissa Moore and 17-year-old Caroline Marks, both grabbing bids and surfing at the World Surf League Women's Championship Tour in Hawaii. This will be the first Olympic Games with surfing as a medal sport. 22-year-old Nathaniel Coleman of Utah became the first American man to qualify for sport climbing's Olympic debut, making the final in a qualifier in France. He joins Kyra Condi and Brooke Robotu, who qualified on the women's side. There are now 28 U.S. athletes who have qualified for Tokyo. Figure skater Brady Tinel is competing this weekend at the Grand Prix final in Torino, Italy. You can listen to our interview with the Carpentersville native in episode 13. This week, the Chicago Blackhawks announced assistant coach Mark Crawford, who was also the 1998 Canadian Olympic hockey coach, will be away from the team while they investigate allegations of abuse made regarding conduct years ago with another organization. And a Minnesota judge Wednesday ordered that a former member of the Miracle on Ice U.S. Olympic gold medal team, Mark Pavelich, should be committed to a secure treatment facility, saying the hockey star is mentally ill and dangerous. He's charged with beating a friend with a pole back in August. On this week's Sports Spotlight, we talk open water swimming with Homer Glen native Becca Mann, who grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago. Her swimming journey has gone through Florida and Hawaii as well. She missed out on her chance for an open water bid for Tokyo, but has not closed the door on competing in the 2020 Games. In the meantime, she's grabbing headlines with her historic swim across a Hawaiian channel, something no one has ever done before. I had a chance to chat with her on the phone. Born and raised in Illinois, is that correct?
Yes. I was actually homeschooled from sixth grade and on until college.
All right. So did you do club swimming? Where did you kind of get the bug?
Yes. So my older sister was joining the swim team when I was like five, and I had to do everything that she did. I didn't really know how to swim. Like, I knew how to not drown, but I didn't know how to swim. But she was going to swim practice, and I was driving her there with my parents, and I just had to do everything that she did. So I snuck into that swim practice so I could be with her. I, like, packed my swim bag on my own. My parents wouldn't let me join because they weren't confident in my swimming abilities. And then I just never looked back.
So how long did you swim? Did you go to, like, a club team? Or how did you progress?
Yeah, I kind of jumped around club teams in Illinois until I was, like, 13. And then I decided to move to Florida. I actually convinced my parents to let me move. It was hard, but I managed to convince them because I really, like, I don't know, swimming in Illinois was just hard for me, and I, like, needed to be somewhere else, just, like, needed a change of scenery to get to the level that I wanted to be at. And I moved to Clearwater to train with Randy Reese when I was 13, and then trained there until I was 16, and then moved to North Baltimore from there, and then swam there through 2016.
Now, when did you make this transition from swimming in pools to swimming outdoors? Obviously, in Chicago, that would be a little bit more challenging than in Florida.
Yeah, actually, like, there was never really a transition, because my family was a big triathlon family, so we would, like, just go and do triathlons for fun, and I started doing those from a really young age, too, and I loved open water, like, so much more than pool swimming. I liked that there weren't any, like, black lines telling me where to go, or, you know, it wasn't as controlled. It was really good for, I had a really adventurous spirit, so it was very good for that. And I probably did, like, my first open water races in triathlons, but I actually did my first 10K. Again, like, I had to convince my parents to let me do this. we've just gone on vacation to Florida every now and then, and, like, my dad had to have something to do. So we do Swim Miami, and it's this open water race. And there was a 5K, a 10K, and a mile. And I was signed up for, I was seven, and I was signed up for, I think, either the mile or the 5K. And then I saw that there was a 10K, and I was like, I need to do that. So I convinced my parents to let me do that, but the only way they would let me do it was if my older sister swam with me, who was nine at the time. And they're like, okay, you have to, like, take care of your sister, and you need to make sure that, like, she doesn't drown and that she's always taken care of. She, like, stops to feed. And my older sister did not want to do this at all. But basically, for like 3.5 hours, I drafted off of her. She, like, stopped and helped me at every feeding station, was always making sure that I was all right. And we were supposed to come out of the water together holding hands. And we were like 100 meters from the shore, and she got stuck behind, like, this really slow old man. And I just decided to swim around her and sprinted to the finish and beat her.
She never lets that go.
All right. I want to get into, because I went through your full account of your record-setting swim this summer. First of all, just answer me this question. Why? Why did you do this?
So I was, like, feeling very, every now and then I really need to go on an adventure. Like, I was feeling the itch for something incredible. And I've just been reading about, like, these crazy open water swims, and I just knew that I wanted to do one. I've been so drawn to channel swimming. You know, I did the Lanai to Maui channel when I was 10, and it was such an amazing experience, and I absolutely love channel swimming. So something was, like, really calling me to it, and I was actually at the Olympic Training Center training for open water nationals. It was after that, a little bit after Open Water Nationals, just training for, like, Pan Am. And I was feeling the itch for something crazy. So I contacted Steve Minutonez, who he's like the open water guru. And I was like, what's a really crazy channel swim that I can do that either hasn't been done before, that I could, like, get a record in, or that will just, like, really satisfy my need for this swim? And he was like, I have the perfect thing for you. It's in Hawaii. It's this Maui Nui Tri-Channel Swim. It's never been done before. It'll be really hard because you're going to have currents against you on at least one of the legs. And I was like, this is perfect. Like, it just satisfied everything. And I knew that I was called to it. Like, it just fit so perfectly into, like, the whole journey of my swimming career.
Tell people where exactly you were swimming from. What is this triangle then?
So I started on the island of Maui. And then swam to the island of Molokai, and then from there swam to the island of Lanai, and then swam back to Maui.
Full distance was what, like 40 miles, something like that?
Yeah, around 40 miles.
And you went in expecting that the length of time you would actually be in the water would be what?
Around 15 hours. It ended up being 20 hours and 53 minutes.
But who's counting, right?
Yes. All right. I was at the end.
Okay, so what's interesting is you detail all of the struggles, things that I would think about that apparently you weren't thinking about, you know, like sharks potentially coming in and grabbing you. But, you know, you talk about the choppy waves. You know, you have to take these eating breaks, obviously. You've got to, you know, replenish yourself. And when you do hit one of the islands, you do get a little bit of time, a little bit of a breather, but that almost isn't as helpful. You almost would rather keep swimming. But talk to me.
Definitely.
Months later. After you've gone through this process and people can read the full account of everything you went through, you detail it pretty well. But when you look back at that now, several months later, what are some of the things that stick out in your mind, whether it be emotions, whether it be physical exhaustion? What are the things that you remember when you think about that swim?
Well, the first thing that I remember actually is just the stars, because they were incredible. They were only there for like 3 hours before the moon rose. But whenever I think of it, I just think of, like, I can still picture myself in the middle of the ocean. Like, there's no land, basically no land in sight. I mean, you could see, like, the dark clouds where the islands were, but it was dark, and I felt like I was in the middle of the ocean. And, you know, there's just no light pollution. I just felt, like, so alone in a good way. And then just, like, turning onto my back and seeing all the stars right there. Like, I won't ever experience anything like that again, I think. And, like, that's the first thing that always comes to mind whenever I think of it. And then after that is actually the finish, when I finally finished it. And, like, coming out of the water, the first thing I thought was, I would absolutely do that again, just not right now. And I think that really, like, told me in that moment that I was definitely going to do something like that again. I just don't know when in my life it'll be.
My guess is you pushed your body harder than you had ever pushed it before. What is that experience like? Is it euphoric when you're doing it? Do you not realize it when it's happening? Where does your mind and where does your body go when you push it to a limit like that?
Well, my mind, I was actually a, like, pretty sound mind the whole time, other than my bursts of anger. I got very angry so many times. But I, like, was never really, like, depressed or sad or, like, wanted to give up. I knew that I could make it, and I knew I was going to make it. And it was just, like, a matter of me being angry that I wasn't there in the time that I wanted to be there. There were many portions of the race where I just felt so great, and I was like, wow, this is, like, the coolest thing that I've ever done and maybe that I ever will do. And I really enjoyed that and, like, just allowed myself to be in the present and really, like, be mindful of the experience that I was having. And then other times I was like, I just want to black out for like 10 hours and be at the next island.
Sure.
So it was very interesting because I think I experienced like the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And it's really cool that I got to do that in one swim.
Did you learn anything about your body, how your body responds in that situation? Like you went into detail about how your, you know, your throat would close up, your nose would close up. I mean, it's little things like that.
Yes.
Like, oh, I guess when I push this hard, this happens or that happens.
Yeah, that was definitely the hardest part, is the throat and my mouth. Because I knew that like physically my body, when you think that your body's done, like the human body is an amazing thing. I knew that no matter how badly it hurt, like I could still go on, because theoretically you could probably go on for, if you're feeding well, you could go on for a while, you know? So I knew that like, even if my body felt like it was shutting down, it wasn't, but I did not know anything about that, excluding my throat. I had no idea about sure. that and how safe it was to swim when I felt like my throat was closing up. So that was like towards then I'm like, I really should get to shore so I don't have to deal with this. So that part was really strange.
For people who are thinking about this visually in their mind, you did have help to the side of you. You weren't just, you know, in the middle of the channel by yourself.
Right.
Explain kind of the setup here as people are imagining this scenario.
Okay, so I had one kayak with me, and there was always a kayaker like paddling beside me. And then there was also a boat, which was usually about like 100 meters ahead of me. And then, except every 20 minutes when I'd like come up for a feed, then, cause I would be sighting off the boat. I would come up for a feed every 20 minutes and then they'd like throw a water bottle to me on a string so I could like just drink it and then they'd like reel it back in.
All right. And who was on these boats?
So I had two captains, three kayakers, and then my mom, and my mom was the feeder, but my mom was so seasick. After about like an hour, she just started throwing up, and she didn't stop throwing up until like probably 10 hours after I'd finished. It was so bad.
Just from seasickness.
Usually is not a seasick person. It was just that kind of day.
Sure.
The ocean was not not taking any prisoners.
And you detail in there some of your struggles with your mother during that that time period. Communication issues, food issues. I can imagine
yes.
emotions
oh, we
were running pretty high.
We joke about that. Yeah, I got really mad at the crew quite a few times. I even like swam away from the boat in the kayak at one point because I thought that they were like taking me on the wrong course, which I knew that they were taking me on the right course, but my emotions got the better of me and I kind of let them drive me and take a different path.
You had special goggles on. What kind of wetsuit did you have on?
So I didn't wear a wetsuit. Okay. I just wore my regular goggles for half of it. And then once I started swelling up, I changed to like a bigger pair of goggles that were clear also for the night. And I had like an LED light on the back of my head so the kayaker could see me. And then I changed back into the other pair of goggles once I started swelling again. And then for a suit, I actually just wore like a pool racing suit down to my knees for half of it because I find that I don't chafe much when I wear those. So I wore that for the first, I think, like 15 hours. And then on the last island, I changed into a practice suit, which I did end up chafing more in that one. But I'd just been in the other one for too long. And, like, I was starting to chafe in some places. And then I put on the other one, started chafing in other places. So I knew that no matter what, I was going to chafe. So that's why I ended up changing into the practice suit.
Most people, when they're looking for an adventure, go get a tattoo or they will bungee jump. That's not the way you roll, huh?
Definitely not.
Let's talk a little bit about where you're at in your career right now. So where are you at? Are you training? Are you in season? Kind of where are you at?
So I'm kind of taking the semester. I'm back at school at USC. And I'm kind of taking the semester off. And then I might get back into it next semester.
Okay.
I major in screenwriting at USC. So I really wanted to focus on that because I absolutely love writing. And I'm just taking it day by day.
So when you get back, are you getting back to the pool or are you continuing to do open swim then or open water?
I do a little bit of open water swimming on my own, like just go out to the ocean. So nice living in Southern California. You can just go to the ocean and swimming a bit there. But I think next semester I will end up going back into the pool a little bit.
You don't swim for USC though, do you?
No, not anymore.
So let's talk a little bit about Tokyo then, because I know that there's already been a qualifier, right? Did you try to qualify for Tokyo?
Yes, and I was fifth at Open Water Nationals, and then the top two ended up making it.
Okay. All right. So what does that mean then? I mean, are there still opportunities for you?
Not for open water, but there are for pool, because pool trials are in June.
Okay. So you have set your eyes on that then? Is that the plan?
I think so. I'm still deciding. I'm taking it day by day. Okay. And then I'll reevaluate in January.
Where is being an Olympian at kind of on your list of goals moving forward outside of swimming channels across the world?
Well, I came so close in 2012 and 2016, and those were both really hard for me. And over time, I've kind of accepted that. And back then, all I wanted was to be an Olympian. I wanted to achieve this goal. But now, I kind of have a holistic view of my journey, and I realized that it is about the journey. It's not about the destination. And it took me a really long time to learn that. Even though everyone tells you that, but it took me a while to accept that and really. Figure out the path that I wanted to take. So being an Olympian is not necessarily my top goal. If it happens, that'd be amazing. If it doesn't, that's fine too.
So what do you swim at in the pool then? Are there any kind of specific categories that you're involved in?
Usually the 1500 and the 800, and I used to do a lot of 400 IM, but my breaststroke kind of died, and now I don't do that as much.
What advice would you give kids maybe getting into the sport, or people who look up to you and see your journey and kind of want to replicate that?
I would say you need to love it. Don't do it if you don't love it, because it's going to take up so much of your time that you have to really have a passion for it, and you need to enjoy every minute.
Are there days when you wake up and say, I don't love this anymore?
For sure. And then those actually don't come that often for me. They did. There was a period of about a year where it was that every day. But other than that, I've been lucky where I only have that once or twice a month. But there are some people who have that pretty often. And if you know that you still love it, even if you're feeling that day to day, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, then it's worth pursuing. You just have to know.
We've got a link to that blog post where she goes into depth about her historic swim. It's attached to the website. Take a look. I'm Ryan Burrow with Quest for Gold, only on WGNRadio.com.